there's nothing I can do with it now. It doesn't have anything in it for me to follow. I need to just do something else and keep going. Hi, and welcome to episode 133 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And this week, as usual, we rocked up 5 minutes before and said, okay, what are we going to talk about? But we have a really good topic for you. I think something we haven't covered before. We don't exactly know what we're going to be calling it, but basically we're going to talk about what to do when a painting goes wrong. But first of all, and I'm sure that's not happened, a lot of you probably don't know that feeling when a painting goes wrong. I know I certainly don't, but apparently Alice does. So she's going to share it with us.
And we're going to talk about that instead of the other option, which was the practicalities of costs of shipping and availability of materials, which we just pulled a face at and groaned and said, yeah, but we might come back to this at some point because that's real life too. But yeah, basically, it's all horrible stuff today. Painting's going wrong, shipping costs, not anyway, we'll make it fun.
So before we get into all the, before we get into the paintings going wrong, what have you been up to this week?
Okay, so apart from dealing with paintings going wrong, I have been doing things to get ready for my open studios. So that is, it's on our art trail. It's called Artists at Home in our area, and it's happening 17th to the 19th of September, which slightly caught me unawares. So I've been in quite panic mode with everything that I need to do to get ready. So and just kind of juggling, I want to get this work photographed. I haven't had work photographed for a while, and this I want to get photographed. Right, so I have been doing all the things that need to get ready for open studios. So ours is called Artists at Home. There's nothing yet on my website about it, but it's the 17th to the 19th of September, and it's kind of slightly caught me unawares. Usually it happens in June. And in my head, it was the end of September. And actually, the 17th of September is not the end. It's the middle. It's quite soon. So I'm in a slight, I'm not in a panic about it because the work is finished, but, or mainly finished, but it's all those last minute things. So I've been getting photography booked in and working out, you know, with the framer. He started making the frames so that we can drop them in at the last minute. Like a little bit of last minute, so all of that kind of stuff. So that's really what I've been doing. Behind the scenes, I've been getting things ready for this Time to Shine challenge, which I mentioned on an Instagram live, and everyone said, yeah, that would be good. So I'm just working out what that looks like. Don't have dates for that yet, but if you want to know, follow me or get on the email list. Email lists always the answer. I've been doing things like looking into email lists and thinking about switching providers, some boring stuff like that. So,
once or twice kind of started that and then just got daunted and told myself I'm too busy to look at this now and just walked away because it's like, oh, I can't face it. But it does need to happen at some point. Are you on MailChimp?
I'm on MailChimp. And MailChimp is fine at the beginning, but when your list gets big, it starts to get quite expensive, and it's even more expensive if you have the level where you use all the automations, and I don't use all the automations, but it's quite expensive even though I'm not on that level. And given that for my art I just use it as a kind of, you know, general email all the time, it's an excessive amount of money to pay, really.
Yeah, for me it's quite restrictive in the sense that I do something that you don't do, which is segment the list between artists and art collectors. And you can't, there's certain things in MailChimp you can't do, can't have a pop-up form in the way you would want. There's certain, and I can't even remember now what the restrictions are, but I know we keep running into these roadblocks. And I've been told that there are a couple of other things that would take that problem away and be less expensive. So,
yeah. Well, I'm looking at switching to Flowdesk. So that would take my
email. That's nice and simple and beautiful. It just won't work for me because it won't let me do the segmentation.
Yeah, you can segment in Flowdesk.
I don't believe I can do what I want to do, because we looked at it, Mariana and I, and I couldn't do it.
What you can't do yet in Flowdesk is if somebody clicks on a link in the email, you can't add a tag and segment them as a result of clicking a specific link in the email. But what you can have is you can have, like, are you interested in hearing about Alice's art? Tick. That goes to one segment. Are you interested in hearing about courses and workshops? Tick. That goes to a separate segment. So you can do that. But that's what I mean, is not quite as complicated on the automation stuff. But I think I might link mine with what happens in Kajabi, which is where I really get a bit fiddly with it. So, yeah, it's complicated. It is complicated. But, you know, it would cut my costs from 70, whatever it is, £72 a month now down to $19 a month.
Yeah, mine's a lot now in MailChimp. But I would rather, I think I would like to go to the more sophisticated. But then when I look at them, it's like, oh, I need an expert to do this with me, which means, and they never can do it on their own. You have to be doing it with them. Yep. So I need to get.
Yeah.
But yeah. So one way or another, we're both going to end up leaving that. This is exciting, isn't it? Shall we move on from MailChimp?
Yeah, when she says more sophisticated, she means ActiveCampaign, which is the other way of going. But I've just
got ConvertKit. I looked at
ActiveCampaign generally gets better reviews than ConvertKit.
Yeah, I haven't even begun to look into either.
Yeah,
I did log it. I did sign up for both, as I say, for the free trial.
Yeah,
and then went. Because you need time and you need mental space for these things. Even when I got MailChimp set up the way I needed it, I had someone do that for me because it's too complicated for me. And it was great, but it needed some of my time to tell her what I wanted.
It does. It comes back to the question about, like, what do you really need it for? And, you know, for my regular, here's Alice's art, I don't use it that complicated. So why pay for it?
If I had a regular, here's Louise's art, I'd be really on top of the world. I don't get that far. What I have started doing is my weekly artist newsletter. I've started remembering to do once a month or once every 2 months. It's a bit more general, and then let everyone have that, which is really what I need.
I'm going to do that on a separate thing. So it's just one of those things, isn't it? That, you know, when you start, your issues are 1, 2, 3, 6, seven, 8 years, whatever it is now, 11 years into MailChimp, my issues are more complicated.
That's it.
And when simpler, you just review.
When someone's listening and they're at the beginning, they'll think, oh, I'm not going to even do this because it sounds so daunting, because I heard Alice saying that she's got, but you've got to remember that that's the 10 years on version of Alice, not the beginning version of Alice, who had, you know, maybe 50 subscribers and was using MailChimp for free, and it's all very different. So don't let this conversation put you off doing this stuff, because it only gets complicated later on.
Yeah, and if anything, what it shows you is it is possible to move at a point where something becomes no use for you, and MailChimp is still a good starting one. Seems to be that it's MailChimp and MailerLite are free for the certain number of subscribers. Flowdesk is a small price. What you want to look for in Flowdesk, Google search Flowdesk, you will find somebody who has written a review article for it, and they will have a link that will give you half price. So it takes it from $38 down to $19. So with Flowdesk, you start paying right from the beginning, but it's a small price and that price never goes up.
Yeah.
So those
are nice. They have very nice templates and everything. And it works really well with Squarespace.
The only thing that I have noticed with some people that I get from Flowdesk is they put a lot of content that seems to be in design. I don't know whether they're doing it designed or content within images. So when I get it on my mobile, it looks like a blank email.
Yeah.
Some quite big people are making that mistake.
And when you do that, I've said this before, I'm not sure I'm 100% right, but what I heard on a tech podcast is that when you do that, the images on a mobile phone, they don't download, and therefore the email shows as not read when actually it was read. So your stats in something like MailChimp are not reliable gone to this person anymore. The more people are opening things on mobile phones, the less reliable they are, unless you send a pure HTML email with no images, but everyone has a header image or something, and that is what tells the analytics from mobile that it was opened. So interesting just to know. So I've just assumed now that my open rate is higher than it's telling me. And I can see that because when I resend something, people will write to me and say, you resent me this, but I already opened it. But MailChimp says they didn't. So anyway, this is really, I think we should cut all this out.
No, because everybody should be doing emails. This is important.
Put my bit out because that was boring.
No, I think that's important too. And I was just going to say, I've got a little tip on that. In order to get people to click that thing that says download images, in MailChimp, when you upload an image, you have a space where you can put an alt text. And that shows even when the image shows in MailChimp. So I put little jokey things in there sometimes that says, this is a fab pic, you want to see it. And that makes people, you know, make sure you download the images, you know, or this is a fantastic blue painting in a beautifully tidy room. And then they click and then they see the whole thing as you want them to. Okay, so yeah, that's what I've been doing. We're not going to have any time for the main topic. What about you? What's your week been?
Well, very quickly, I have been promoting my follow-on course to my main course. And so that's only available to people who took the first course. And so I've been just, when I say promoting, I'm not promoting because they already know me. And it's more like letting people know it's available and answering questions. And as you know, anytime you put something up for sale, there are a million questions. Yeah. So it's mainly answering people's questions and also setting it up and filming the videos. And the course is going to be based on my main course ends with an assignment to begin an investigation, to begin an idea and go work on it in whatever way you need to. And this course is going to be 6 weeks of we all work together on our own investigation, whatever that is.
Fun.
But I have assignments and I'm teaching more advanced concepts than what we learned in the first course. And I'll have assignments, but I'm also going to tell people, if you want to ignore the assignment because you've got a good idea for your series, go off and do your good idea. So it'll be much more of a supportive space for everyone to work on the same thing. But very much, I'm saying that, very much educational. So I'm recording all the videos for that, all of the lessons. We're getting into more nuanced concepts than I teach in the first course. But as part of it, I decided to film myself and share what I'm exploring. And I decided to make it something that I've wanted to do, but doesn't really tie into anything I'm working towards at the moment. So just a nice little side project, which is involved. I'm not going to explain what it is because they have to be taking the course to see it, but it's involved a lot of sanding, a lot of masks, a lot of industrial tools, and I'm having a really good time with it. And I'm, you know, when you do things where you just feel like, ooh, I really love that. This is for me. This is me now. I'm doing me. And then you think, why am I doing the other stuff? Because this is really what I want to do. So really good fun. I love filming myself working and editing those films because it's I can teach while I'm doing it, but I'm making something. And so I'm not just teaching.
Do you also find that when you film, because I said last week, one of the things I feel a bit self-conscious if I'm filming myself while I'm working. But do you find that when you do that and you edit it and watch it back, that you also learn a bit more about your process?
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's
I don't
quite
feel self-conscious because I know I can edit it all and I know I don't have to put any of it out. So I would feel self-conscious if it was live. I don't think I would go live like sometimes you've done, I think,
right.
And Nicholas Wilton does it all the time. He just switches the camera on and paints.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd do that because so much of my time is, it would look like I'm getting nowhere or just making a giant mess, which is our next topic. But if I'm going to edit it for educational purposes, so I know, well, if nothing works out that would be any use to anyone else to watch, I can just scrap it. I don't feel self-conscious. But yeah, I do think sometimes watching it back, what often happens, and this leads into our main topic, but what often happens is I think, oh, you should have stopped there.
Yeah.
Like, I can see it look really good there. What are you doing after that?
Oh, I think that's a really good point. And actually, that's probably a bigger incentive for me to do it than anything else. The thing that's difficult, and I've noticed this week, is I am like one of those, I don't know, some crazed fly when I'm working on things. You know, I go from one painting to another. It's on the wall, it's on the floor, it's on the table.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, I need a sort of tracking device on the camera, or I'd have to keep stopping and moving. And I just, that's the bit that stops me. So
I filmed a big painting. So these ones I'm working on are little, so they're on the table, which means it's a fixed spot.
And yeah, that's easier. To move
between them. Yeah. But I filmed myself working on this giant one. And what I did a lot of the time, because of exactly what you say, is I moved over to the other side of it and forgot to move the camera. So there's hours of footage of my arm moving.
Yeah. Or just your back blocking the view.
And me talking away. Oh, yeah, look at that. That looks great.
Oh, tricky things. Anyway, you work it out as you go.
So that has been a really nice lead-in into this main topic idea about when we ruin things. And this is often a question that comes up for me in my courses, and I'm sure for you too, Alice, is how do you know when to stop? How do you not go too far? How come I always ruin things? And why do all my paintings go wrong at some point? And so we thought that'd be a really good topic for discussion. And Alice brought this topic because of a specific experience you've had, which I don't know about. So why don't you tell us about that first?
Yeah. So my experience was, so I've got some larger paintings that I'm working on, which I knew were getting close. I was quite happy with them. And I posted a section of one on Instagram, basically saying, and if you go to my feed, it's Alice at Alice Sheridan Studio. It's the one that shows a corner of one that's kind of mainly yellowish. And I said, you know, this one's getting close. I'm nearly there. And it had a lovely response on Instagram. Loads of people said, oh, yeah, I love this one. I love this one. Anyway, I went in the next day thinking, right, I'm just going to make a few changes. Kind of messed it up. And then thought, damn you. But this is I want to come back to your point about not going too far. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about how I think I might have recovered it or what happened next. So I had this painting that I felt great about. I was liking it. I posted it. And when I made the changes to it, it felt like I'd taken away some of the energy. I think what I was trying to do was add a little bit more interest in some areas. And I think what I ended up doing was spoiling some of the personality of it. So there was a definite section where I was quite happy working on it. I knew what I was doing. I was quite happy doing it. I knew what my intentions were. And then I stood back from it and I just thought, you've made that worse, not better. And had that horrible sinking feeling and thought, why didn't you leave it where it was? And the answer to that is because I knew where it was wasn't finished. So you've got no choice but to keep going. Would I have been happy leaving it where it was? No. There was something about it at that stage that felt to me like this is not quite done. This is not quite there. So you've got to keep going. Right. Now we're in this stage of, you've messed it up, you idiot, you should have stopped, we've dealt with it, you should have stopped, now what? So I left because I had to get home for something. I left and I felt a bit glum and a bit gloomy about it and a bit, you idiot, you're also up against a time scale. This has got to go to the photographer on like Monday, like 3 days' time. And I was a bit annoyed with myself. What I did, serendipitously, I left my phone behind in the studio. So I had to drive back later that day to pick it up. And as I came in through the door, I could look at this painting and I could see immediately what was wrong with it, where I'd smushed it up and what I needed to add. And I had to be back home for supper and I got some paint quickly. And I basically broke up some of the sections that had become a little bit too tight because I could see it straight away coming back in.
Mm.
And one thing that I often do is if there's a painting that I'm working on and I'm not sure about, I hang it in a space in my studio where I see it right in front of me when I open the door. And that's the clearest way to go, that's the bit that needs changing. This was on the floor, so it was a little bit different. And I'm sitting here today talking about it. I'm actually not sure if I fixed it because I haven't been back and looked at it again. I might go back and go, yeah, that didn't help. That didn't solve it. You still got more to do. That's going to be my job for tomorrow. But the point is, yes, I felt low about it, but I kept going. And I think we often hit those stages in paintings. Not every painting hits that stage, but when you get to that point in a painting, my experience now tells me this is going to be a better painting as a result of this. So don't panic about it.
Yeah. And you said something really important at the beginning of that, I think, that I often say to people, you wouldn't have kept going if you didn't know it wasn't right. Mm. So yes, you might have lost some beautiful passages that were really lovely, but you knew it wasn't right. So it's not true that you've gone too far. You just haven't gone far enough yet. You haven't finished it yet. And you've got to the point where you've messed up what you had, but you had to do that.
Yeah.
And that's hard for us to remember. And there's a particular painting I remember because I submitted it for a critique somewhere. And I knew it wasn't right, but it had these amazing textures and translucent areas and contrast between opaque and translucent and light and dark and beautiful colors. But it wasn't right. And I submitted it. I got advice. It wasn't you, it was someone else. I got advice from two different people. I then made changes, ruined it completely, lost everything good about it, but didn't make any improvement to it. And that always happens when I ask for help from someone outside. It just never works for me. And then I was really depressed about it. The other day, I came across that painting, a photograph of it in my iPhotos. And I was like, oh yeah, yeah, it had a few nice passages in it, but it wasn't working. It wasn't that amazing thing. Yeah. I remember it in my mind as the lost painting. It had these gorgeous textures that I've never achieved again. Well, I've got a photograph of them, but I wouldn't have been able to sell it to anyone. I wouldn't have been able to show it anywhere. It wasn't done. And so that's the first thing I think we have to remember when we get to that stuck point is, well, it was no good anyway. Even though I thought it had some nice things, but then when you get to that, what happens? So you went in and you could see instantly, but it happens to me often that I just can't see instantly. And this is an example behind me, this big blue one.
Mm-hmm.
It was something else. And then I went over it with these blues and it's...
You've quite covered that up.
I went over it with drippy paint.
Yeah.
And it was late at night, so the light was artificial. And what I was doing was working with all this wet paint, both smooth smushes with my hands and drips, and blending these really subtle colors together. And it looked beautiful when I left it. But because acrylic paint dries darker than it looks, and because the lighting was off, when I came in the next morning, like you say, it's just a covered up big blue blob. It was lots of subtle color shifts and lots of beautiful things happening. But now this is the stage, that painting's at the stage now where there's nothing I can do with it now. It doesn't have anything in it for me to follow. I need to just do something else and keep going because the idea I had hasn't panned out. It's much, much too dark.
Yeah.
I could start that idea again, but it will have to be a whole new thing. And then there are others where, like you say, it's just you look and you go, oh, I know, it just needs that.
I think it's often that though, isn't it? And it's going back to that question about, well, what was this painting about for me? And it's interesting, the one that you've done, it's almost you know, you were exploring something. So that evening where you were working on it with the paint in that way, there was a reason why you were doing that.
And oh, and I was so happy.
Yes.
So happy. That's one of my happiest painting nights.
Yeah. So, but this is a really important point of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you were so happy and you enjoyed that, don't devalue that experience of it.
Yes.
And okay, so now you're looking at it and you're thinking, yeah, well, that didn't quite work out. But you can't get a more valuable lesson than that.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, that's really important. And that's where having something like a studio notebook or just a sheet of paper that you pin up on the wall next to your painting and you write notes to yourself, like in this small group I'm in, I wrote a post the other day about what I'm learning and almost like little directions for myself where not to get stuck, what to do, picking up on what my personal hang-ups are, where I get stuck. So one of the things that I wrote, you know, that I wrote down in this is, you know, I get more stuck on paintings that feel like landscapes because it ties me into something that has to be closer to something that people have to recognize. And I find those harder in a way than the pure abstract ones where anything goes. Maybe because I feel like I have more to lose. So that's an important learning for me in this. And this one that I'm talking about, when I stood back and I looked at it and when I was in the, right, this hasn't worked. And I thought, well, why hasn't it worked? And it was like, because when you were painting on it, when you were really enjoying it, it was all about that sense of how the sky melts into the land. You know, where there is a crossover in that. And actually, I had defined that too much.
Yeah.
So one of the things that helped move it on was re-breaking that up again. Now, that's a very precise solution to a very precise problem that was my personal wanting for what that painting was to be about. So anybody listening, yours is going to be completely different. But the essence is that it goes back to this point about, well, what did you want from this painting? And you've got to have that. And that's the thing that's going to give you your steer out of it.
And often when you get mired in the middle, it's because you've forgotten that.
Yeah.
It's often, or you never had it.
Yeah.
Or you've started painting just for the sake of it and you never had it. And in the case of that big one, I'm not even slightly worried because I know I didn't have it and I was beginning and exploring. And then what happened was, so it was going to be the first layers, but what happened was, oh, I like the way that's happening. I like that. I like that. Oh, let me play with that. And you can get in that stage and feel like, oh, I've got a painting here. I'll just do this and this and this and it'll be a painting. When really the stage I was at was still at the stage of, I don't know what this is about, but I'm just having fun with the paint. And you've got to be okay with knowing that, I think, which comes with experience of knowing I can tell, and it happens to me still all the time, that I start pushing things to finish.
Mm.
So I'm doing these six for this demo, for the series, for the course. And two of them became beautiful objects quite quickly.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying.
And I'm like, oh, I like those. Like, that's it. I immediately went to the other four, like, right, let's get you cracking on then. Because if I can do it over here, I can do it with you. But they're nowhere near. And I need to accept that they're going to be something different and they're going to take maybe a month or 2 months or, you know, maybe never. But I can get into a mindset of production, like, right, I've done those two. They look brilliant. Let's do some more just like that, which is not what I want to do anyway. So I have to catch myself and say, no, that's not what I want. What I actually want is to find out what each of those four want to be, which will be something different.
And this big blue one that you've got behind you is interesting because you were talking last time about how one of the things that you're interested in at the moment is building up different textures. But in the ones that you spoke about before and the ones that you've been sharing on Instagram, a lot of those textures are almost like light field. They're light, isn't it? They're pale in value.
Yes.
You've got collage elements. You've painted over them mainly with white and lighter colours. Yeah. And then you're going to come in with these bigger, darker marks. It's almost like all you've done is just do that, but in reverse.
Except there's no texture in this one.
But there's visual texture.
Yeah, there's a little bit, but there's none yet.
Yeah.
And I want to keep going with that process. And I don't want them all to be light But I didn't do that here. What I did here was something different because I got carried away with the way the paint was working. And that's fine too, because that might end up being a blend of the two things. But all I'm saying is that's just very preliminary. Like, yeah. As long as I accept that's very preliminary, it won't depress me. But if I start thinking, oh, why did you do that? Yeah. You know, that was a waste of an evening. And really, I mean, when I say joyful, it was like I had talking heads on. I was dancing around. I was dancing so much that I aggravated my, I have this plantar fasciitis in my feet and I aggravated it. Now I can hardly walk. That's what happens when you get old and you dance. But I was just having such a good time in here. And so that's important too.
It is.
Because that tells you something like, okay, as you say, it didn't work there, but that idea was working in the wet paint. So now I need to think, okay, well, I need stronger light and dark contrast because even though it looked like I had them, I didn't when it dried. So I need to go in and make things lighter and darker. And maybe I can try it again, but I can't salvage much of that layer. I can't think, oh, but I want to keep that bit. Because it's not there, it's not anything yet.
So there's a couple of things here, isn't there? You know, one is this recognizing when the experience is really joyful for you, even if, and that still is of value, even if it doesn't get you to the end point that you want at that stage and at that time. Second yeah. thing is the benefit of taking photographs of things at different stages. And that's also helped me this week because I've been working on a different process with a lot of these paintings that are finished, which is actually what I've done in the past. And you just mentioned it, like when you do something and you feel that you've got it quite good at the beginning, in the past, maybe I've just almost obliterated that or moved past that too quickly. And sometimes I thought, well, there was something in that, you know, why just obliterate it for the sake of it? So with some of these paintings, they are quite close to a kind of visual structure that came about fairly early on. So one of my doubts on are they finished is, have you done enough with these? Have you put yourself through the mill? Have you changed them enough? Has there been enough progress? And actually, when I look back to the photographs that I took at the beginning, I have done enough. There are significant changes, modifications, alterations, bits where I've worked on areas to get it to the point where it feels like, yeah, that's right. Even though overall, from a tiny thumbnail, it might be that there's not a massive change. Yeah. So taking photographs in the middle of your process when it is really valuable, really, really useful learning experience, I think, with all of these. You know, sometimes, like you say, you look back and you think, ah, I should have left it as it was. But the reality is when you go back to those, zoom in on them, nah, they weren't there, you know?
Yeah. And that goes to that point of when someone else says, like I did with that painting behind you, oh, I love that, leave it. That goes to that point of what do you do? Because if you're experienced enough to know, yeah, but I don't, and I'm never going to be happy with it, you'll keep to your own gut, you'll stick to your guns. If you've only been going a year or two, it can really throw you off.
Yeah.
You think, well, God, maybe I don't know anything. If they think that's finished, maybe I'm just barking up the wrong tree entirely. But you have to remember, and going back to your idea of the intention, that person who loves it doesn't know your intention, what you're trying to do, what you're concerned about, what you want to express. So they're judging it based on something of theirs. And your intention is still equally valid. Their love of it is valid too, but your intention for it is valid. And if you're not happy to say, okay, have it, it's okay to say, no, it's not finished. And I think people find that really difficult. In the beginning for me, when someone would validate me in any way, shape or form, I would be like, oh, you know, in fact, if someone had said, I really love that in the beginning, I would have said, do you want it? Here, like, you know, take it and put it on your wall. It completely washes off me if I don't love it.
Yeah. And that is something that gets a little bit more grounded in time, I think. And I think what you're doing with people possibly in this second course and what I do with people often or anybody who's working as a practitioner, as an artist, it's about refining your own direction in it so that A, you don't get thrown off with other people's opinions, and B, you know what your purpose is for it. And that's going to help you either with outside criticism or when you reach these points where you think that's not working. It's like, okay, well, go back, take a step back, deep breath. What is it that you were trying to do here? Just go back to that, because that's going to give you your leads.
Yeah, this idea of your intention for a painting or a series of paintings, or maybe your whole work, it depends. It's so important, and it's hard to, this is what I'm trying to teach people, as you say, in the second course, to find something and then work on exploring it. And often a question people will ask is, I want to do abstract landscapes. How do I do that? Mm. And I give examples of different abstract landscape painters that have made videos or written books, as we'll talk about shortly, and explain their process and their reasoning behind what they do. And you can look at them and you can see that each one has a different thing they're trying to communicate and a different focus. And then you have to find yours. So saying I want to abstract a landscape to me is as vague as
it's too broad.
I have no plan. Yeah. You might as well say, I have no plan. Why do you want to abstract the landscape? So for me, it's about this feeling of freedom that I have in a particular type of landscape, not a particular area, but a wild open space. So it was exactly the same when I was in the Grand Canyon as it is when I'm on the moors here. But that feeling of there's no one else around, this is nature and no people. That feeling, and for me, I'm trying to explore or express my internal feelings about that, whereas some abstract landscape painters are trying to express, they're abstracting what they see and turning that into something because that's what they're interested in, or they're abstracting the sensations and sounds because that's what they're interested in, or they're painting trees in an abstract way because they want to express a specific feeling about trees, but not just, I want to paint trees abstractly. That's just too general. And so I try and work with people on digging into, and you don't get to the answer in one like journaling session. I think for me, it was a couple of years of painting and get into a deeper level of why I'm doing this. At first, I think it's this, then I think it's this, then I think it's this, and it just keeps going.
It's interesting because we've spoken before about this idea of having intentions with work. And I remember you being quite resistant to it at that point.
No. You see, we had that argument in that episode. Everybody go back and listen to that episode, because Alice thought I was disagreeing about intention, and I wasn't at all. But I was saying, often I find my intention as I work. And this is that on a grand scale. So when I started, I didn't know why I was doing abstract landscapes, but I found my reason through doing the work, through painting, writing notes, thinking, getting deeper and deeper into it. So I for sure don't tell people you have to have an intention before you start. I just tell them, at some point during the process of making a painting, you have to decide, you have to start making decisions, because otherwise it is just and I've worked both ways. As I think I said in that episode with Ted Hughes, I had an intention from the beginning and I knew what it was. And then in some series, I have no intention, but it emerges.
It does. This is where I think we're totally on the same page, is that what's important about this is that you take the time to stop, do that work, pick up on it, and understand why you're making this painting in the first place. Why are you even doing this? Why is this relevant?
Go back to the blue one. This is why it's not found its way and why I'm not worried. Because I don't know what it's about yet. I know that. I know that I'm just playing with paint at the moment, but I also firmly, truly, 100% believe that certainly for me, the reason is there. There is a reason. It's guided by intuition, not by my mind. There's a reason there. If I keep going, And if I don't let my mind start trying to finish it, if I keep going with the play part of it, exploration, then I'll get to the reason and it'll start making sense. That's always what happens for me. If I try and do it the other way around, then it doesn't work. But we've said this before, that that's us in life too.
Yeah.
That's the way we approach life.
Yeah.
And everything.
I mean, you can't, I don't think you can set out with a roadmap for a painting and follow a set of instructions and do it and get it to where you want to be. That's ultimately going to be massively unsatisfying. I think one of the things that I probably is worth touching on before we finish is that one of the things that I see artists do, and it probably is those who are more towards the beginning of their journey, when they reach this point of being frustrated with the painting, is they go, oh, it's not working, so I've just covered it up.
Yeah.
Just covered it up and started again. And it always makes me kind of want to reach out and say, no, don't just, because if you just cover it up with, you know, gesso, you're right back at the beginning again. And the point is that when you're at this middle stage of a painting, or, you know, early middle or late middle, or, you know, somewhere in the messy middle, you're further on than the beginning. And when you just cover it up, you're taking yourself right. It's like a snakes and ladders board. And you know how when you have snakes and ladders and you have little snakes and little ladders, and sometimes you, this is the point where you've just hit a little snake and you just kind of, okay, you want to make some changes and you're going back a few squares. Don't land on that massive, great big F off snake that takes you all the way back to square two again. Like, if you just cover it up with gesso, that's what you're doing to yourself. You're back at the beginning. But so this is where it's important to just go, okay, so where am I with this? What is good about it? What do I like? What's not working? Move it on from there, because there will be clues in that painting. There will be reasons why you chose the color you chose. There will be reasons why you like that bit because of the color, or you don't like that bit because of the color, or you like this bit because the paint mixes, or you don't like this bit because it's too rigid, or you do like this bit because it's too rigid. And there will be something in what has happened to that stage that is your clue and your signal that gets you closer and closer to ultimately what you want that painting to be about. And I'm just like, don't just cover it all up.
It's a bit like, I'm doing some life coaching with somebody at the moment, and we were talking about how when you want something to happen in your life, you try and imagine your way from where you are now to the thing, and it seems too massive. And it's just like, well, there's no way that's ever going to happen. But actually how it happens is in little intuitive steps towards it. It doesn't happen in that one big. And it's the same with the painting, isn't it? So it's the, if you try when you're at the beginning journey or early on in your journey of being a painter, you think, well, I know what I want to achieve, and it's, so I just need to do it. But you've got to take the little steps.
I'm laughing because we all do that, don't we? We all have books or people we follow on Instagram. We're like, oh, look at that. I want to do it just like that. No,
shit,
mine's not like that.
Mine looks nothing like that.
So, you know, there's got to be massive element of forgiveness in this, and acceptance that this is just the process of doing it. And I think perhaps that's where the frustration of, oh, it's not working, cover it up, oh, the frustration, I'm going to bin it, oh, the frustration, I'm not as good. If you can let that part of it go and go, all right, well, today it didn't work. Yesterday I liked it, today I don't. Okay, so tomorrow is going to be different. You come back, you do it again, perhaps more thoughtfully, perhaps less thoughtfully.
Yeah.
You know, that can be the issue as well. But it's just, you know, it happens. But it's a good teacher.
So before we move on to what's inspired, quickly just wanted to say a huge thank you to everyone who commented after our last episode, where we asked you, what should we change? What do you like? What don't you like? Should we have more guests? Should we have less? Whatever we asked you. You all messaged us. You posted on social media. You sent us emails. We're so grateful, especially to the people who couldn't figure out where to leave a comment, but found a place anyway. Thank you for making the effort. We really appreciate it. And they were so lovely. I mean, I was really touched and moved. Yeah. Were you not also?
I think there are some lovely things. I woke up this morning to a message from the other side of the world. just saying, oh my gosh, I've just listened. What a tonic that was. I've missed it so much, especially in lockdown. So it made my day today. I felt like I've caught up with old friends. I love the ones like this where you just chat, the longer the better, lol. And I feel a resurgence of energy and joy to what could have been a really mundane. So I just wanted to say a really big thank you to you both. And I think that that sums up quite a lot of it. You're all like, give me more. Don't keep it short.
Yeah,
but also that it's the reality of not being too scripted or actually too useful. Or
don't be useful.
But you know, some good guests is nice. So that's kind of what we had in mind anyway. So,
and that comment about bringing joy into the day, if you remember last week, I was having a bad day when we met to talk. I wasn't feeling good at all, and I felt a lot better when we were done.
It
is just that thing of talking to someone else about something you really care about, and the thing that no one else in your life wants to listen to you talk about anyway, because, oh God, she's off about paintings again. You ever talk about anything else, as one of my friends said to me.
I saw a message for a comment that somebody else had done about going to a gallery and looking at a show, and they said, there's nothing better than going to a gallery with another artist, because they were both standing there like looking at the paintings going, oh, I wonder how she's done that. Do you think she's done it as a layer? I mean, I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't overhearing the conversation, but I can imagine what it would have been like. Oh, do you think how much they pre-mixed the colours? Do you think it was done in one stage, or how many stages, or was it part of this? And it's these kind of things, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's these kind of, yeah, we're obsessive nerds.
Yeah, it's nerdy conversation about a topic which to me fills up a giant part of my life, and which every now and then I'm confronted with the reality that it matters not one whit to most people walking this planet. The things that I'm so concerned with, and also going back to the painting decisions, the things you care so much about, and someone else looks at the painting and they just have no concept of what you were trying to do or why you were trying to do, because they don't understand abstract painting, or they don't care about abstract painting, and it just all looks like blobs to them.
Yeah, I had a couple of nice comments this week on Instagram from one particular person. I think maybe it was just this post, and she went through a couple of them, and she just kept posting that face that's like complete flat line, like kind of face. And then on one of them, she said, yeah, but what is it you're actually trying to draw here?
Oh, God.
And a bit of me thought, delete. A bit of me thought, answer. And then I just thought, can't be asked.
It would just take too long to explain.
Yeah, but also, it's like, if you don't like it, that's fine, move on, you know. But I'm not going to get into involved with that. But it wasn't rude. It was just okay, fine, you don't get it, that's fine.
I had a couple, because I've got a video on YouTube that's called something like What Makes a Good Abstract Painting, and that gets some classic comments on there once in a while.
Oh dear, we just have to be in this little world, don't we? Yeah, that's the thing though, isn't it, as long as it kind of gives you a laugh every now and again.
So one of the things that inspires us is you guys and your lovely comments. And what we wondered is, if you have not yet left us a review, and I know it's a pain and every podcast ends with please leave us a 5-star review, but it would be really nice if you'd leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, especially to counteract that one person who gave us 1-star and said we babbled on too long. So if you have 5 minutes to go give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and write us a little review, we would absolutely love it.
Yeah, that might help, actually. After having taken the break, that would be nice. It might just kind of wave a flag at a hello.
Yeah.
Apple Podcasts.
They're still here.
They haven't given up.
They've never featured us, and we've ranked quite highly in our category, and they've still never featured us anywhere. Yeah. Very frustrating.
Three again last week, but
so to close out this week's episode, what has inspired you this week? And I already know, because we've written our show notes, that we're both going to say the same thing. So I'm going to let you begin.
Going to let me start. Okay. So it is the David Mankin book that arrived, and it's called Remembering in Paint. And it has been written by Kate Reeves Edwards. And he spoke about it when he was on the episode with you, which can't remember when it was, but it was probably 10 episodes ago. So scroll back if you want to listen to him talk more about it. And I was particularly in anticipating its arrival because of that episode, because I could see that she'd really got to know him and his process. And it is, I have to say, in terms of a value-packed book, it is packed, isn't it?
Yeah.
There are loads and loads of images. David, you're listening. You work like a crazy man. Yeah. Like, there is so much work in here. So visually, it's very exciting. But what I also have really enjoyed is the way that they've broken it down into sections. And I really liked the first part. So that the introduction is called Shaping Something from Nothing. There's a viewpoint from his gallerist. And then it goes through from how he documents things from sketchbook to canvas, and then the emergent image, section three is called. And I quite like the part where Kate is actually going out drawing with him, and she says, you know, she's been drawing alongside and everything's got a bit tight, and she looks over at what he's done and you know has that feeling of like, oh, his is better than mine. You know, and then there's just some tips and things that he says to her about, okay, well, try moving on like this.
Yeah.
And then she gets that little, oh, yeah, that's better feeling. And
yeah.
It captured that really nicely, I think. So I haven't finished yet, because I am starting at the beginning and reading it.
Yes, it's unusual for an art book in that I have read. I was very lucky to get a PDF copy when he was on the podcast so I could talk to him about it. And I read it then, and I'm rereading it now. So I'm about halfway through again. But it is I've got a lot of art books that I haven't even opened. I look at the pictures and I don't get around to reading them, especially if they've got small print, because my eyes are not brilliant anymore. But I'm working my way through this one for a second time. And the reason I'm really recommending it to the people who are taking my course at the moment, because of this subject we've been discussing, because of the idea of intention and what is it you're trying to express. And it's a brilliant book for getting inside one person's mind and understanding what he's trying to express and what he's very particularly interested in. And it's very different from what, if I lived in Cornwall, I would be interested in painting, or what you might be interested in painting. It's his very individual interests. And then he turns that into these paintings that are hugely popular. And that's what I keep saying to people, the more individual and unique and personal your art is, the more other people want to have it, which seems like a contradiction but isn't. So it's a fantastic textbook, I think, for understanding the thought process of an abstract painter. And any of those people who say to us, flat face, well, what's the point, what are you trying to draw, they should read this book, and then they'd have some understanding of what goes into just one person's work. But again, the individual is universal. So that's why I really enjoy it. And I highly recommend it if you want to paint even semi-abstractly, but you don't know where to begin. Don't buy the book and copy exactly what David does, because that won't work for you. But buy the book and understand his thought process and how he's honed in on what he's passionate about, and then turned that into these amazing paintings that other people want, even though that might not be what they notice when they go to Cornwall. They still want the painting because it feels like Cornwall to them.
Yeah, I think it just really highlights this, the practice, what goes into the practice of developing your personal language. And that is everything from what inspires you externally, intrinsically, what satisfies you, what you're driving towards. And the more you go on, the more that gets grounded, and the more that helps you with these moments that you get stuck with a painting. And we've said before, there isn't a shortcut to this. You know, this is, you know, it's work. It's enjoyable work. It's satisfying work. But there has to be the work that goes into it. And that means not every day is going to be a good every day. Not every day is a good day.
Yeah.
You know, but that's something
I always say every day is a good day if you're a painter, not an accountant. No offense to any accountants listening. But personally, for me, just remembering that I don't have to be an accountant and that this is my work, that makes any day a good day.
Yeah. But this is a thing for another time before we get stuck in again. You know, whether it's this definition of work, isn't it? It is work, you know, yes. Making good paintings is work. And that's, yes. That is possibly the difference between a hobby or something that you are pursuing because it is purely enjoyable. You know, there are lots of things that I do where it is purely enjoyable. I know what the outcome is going to be. I know what's going to be satisfying about it. I can turn up and do it without too much thought. Making good art is work.
Yeah. So before we close, I just want to give our addresses for David to send the commission checks to. because actually we didn't plan this. We both came with our own What's Inspired, but because David's book came out, was sent out in the last few weeks, we both ended up with the same thing, and we are not on the payroll, just so you know. So if you would like to purchase David's book, because we've just raved all about it, you can still find it on his website at david-mankin.com/book. So there's still copies for sale there. And I believe it's for sale on Amazon as well. And Book Depository internationally, you can get it at Book Depository.
Yeah, I've just Googled David Mankin book and it's popped up everywhere. Blackwell's, Wordery, Smith's, everywhere. Yeah. So that's the thing to look for. David Mankin, and it's called Remembering in Paint.
So that's it for us this week, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for coming back after the break. We didn't know if there'd be anybody there, but you were all there again. So we really appreciate you. And if you get a chance, do pop over to Apple Podcasts and give us that review. We would really love it. And we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
He couldn't find anything to cut out of our words of wisdom. It was all so good that he had to keep it all.
No, I think he probably fell asleep doing it.
Yeah, or he zoned out and glazed over.
And people... I've got one sec. I've got to let the dog in. I had to get up to close the door because of the Hoover. And now I've got to get out because the dog's scraping because she's not in with me. One sec.
Come in.
Lie down.